Okay, welcome back, everybody. We had a little bit of a break for Yom Tov. I hope everyone, I don't want to say survived Yom Tov, that doesn't sound nice, but I hope everyone enjoyed Yom Tov. It's a lot of hard work, but hopefully it was all worth it. We, Baruch Hashem, had three wonderful shiurim before the Yom Tov break on Shemitah, and then one about Rosh Hashanah. And now we're hopefully beginning, other than my travel schedule, but I hope a somewhat regular weekly series of shiurim, which, as I had said at the outset, I'm hoping to kind of alternate between series in both halacha and more personal and character development and things of the like, focusing on midos and etc. But obviously, I'm always happy to have input on topics and direction from all of you guys. I thought as a opening series, we would speak about the mitzvah of Shabbos candles, of Hadlakas Neiros. Someone actually wrote to me yesterday, a faithful listener to the Shir, someone who does not live in Beit Shemesh, who said, I couldn't even imagine that there's enough for a full shiur on Hadlakas Neiros. You're going to give a series of shiurim? So the truth of the matter is, come on in, welcome. The truth of the matter is that I'm going to do my best to fit this into two shiurim. The reality is we may at some point be a little bit rushed, and I may even have to leave some things out because I realized going through everything yesterday, to really, 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 really do well, I think we would need three shiurim. But my experience is that at some point people get a little bit burnt out or bored after the same topic, even it wouldn't be the same exact issues. But I think it's my intuition. If I'm wrong, someone smarter than me will tell me, and many of you, I'm sure, are smarter than me. But I sense that three shiurim might be a little bit much for people on a similar topic, and therefore I'd like to really fit it into two, and I hopefully we can really do all the important issues justice, and I think that hopefully, obviously a mitzvah that in every home, and everyone here who is so faithfully and regularly fulfilling. So the better we understand the mitzvah and the more we understand the details of those mitzvos, obviously is going to be something that would really benefit us. I'm just going to ask the people who are on the Zoom, if you don't mind muting yourself. If you're not yet muted, I'd appreciate it. So that way there's no background noise. Thank you so much. Okay, so let's get started. I hope everyone has a source sheet and those on Zoom can see it. I've shared the screen. First of all, one thing I just thought it made sense to start off with, you always have to start kind of in the beginning. We shouldn't be confused that Shabbos candles are a nice minhag. They're a nice tradition. Everyone loves Shabbos candles. Who doesn't love the pretty light? I don't know if it's still true, but certainly it was true for many, many, many years. The New York Times even would put the time of Shabbos candles on the Friday edition. And you know, so many Jewish women, even if they're far from observance, light Shabbos candles. All good and true, but we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there's something even more basically true, which the Gemara tells us in source number one: Hadlakas ner Shabbos chova. It's not just a nice thing. It's not just inspiring. It's not just Jewish tradition. It's actually a strict obligation. Just as a background, the Gemara gets to that conclusion that Neiros Shabbos is a chova from the fact that it points out that in the olden days, they used to have all sorts of very crude sources of fire, of wicks and oils and fats. And some of them were very, very malodorous. Did I say that in a polite way? And the Gemara says, well, what's the difference? Just use something that really smells bad and then you won't be in the room. And the Gemara says, no, it's not enough to just light and go out of the room or not be there. There is an obligation, Nero Shabbos Chova, there's an obligation to light the candles and, as we shall see going forward, an obligation to benefit from the candles. And therefore, if you were to light candles that had a bad odor, that would be defeating the purpose. So the odor part's not so relevant nowadays as women make the big decision between, do I use, you know, the wax candles or the clear paraffin or the color paraffin? Do I use multiple colors of the paraffin? We've been at many homes where you see, you know, very, very beautiful and varied ways of people lighting their candles. I've never smelled anything bad about any of them. So that's just a detail of history. But the point that it brings up is the fact that, in fact, the mitzvah of Shabbos candles is, in fact, that it is an obligation. But it is more than that. And I don't want to be short. Again, it's very important to me. I put on my rabbi hat. Very important to me that we get that as a basic point, that we're dealing with an actual chiyuv, not just a nice thing. But I don't want to also lose sight of the fact, at the same time, that you shouldn't think of it as, quote, just a mitzvah. Not that that's a bad thing, but it's not just a mitzvah. In fact, there are many statements in Chazal that speak about the unique spiritual power and meaning, the skula, as it were, of Shabbos candles. And I just brought for you just a few sample examples of that in sources 2 through 4. The Medrash and the Yalkut Shimoni tells us that someone who is faithful and a regular observer of the mitzvah of Shabbos candles, animara lachem nero shel tzion, which seems to be a very beautiful and metaphoric, inspiring way of saying that they will be zocha to come to Eretz Yisrael. Now, if I'm really being honest, I think the Medrash means in the ultimate geula. But think about everyone in this room who gets to light Shabbos candles in Eretz Yisrael. So we've already merited at least some level of a fulfillment of this Medrash, and obviously we all hope for the ultimate fulfillment of this Medrash. But evidently, and now is not the time to explore exactly what the connection would be, but it's just interesting, as I say, that intuitive sense that we have, that fire, that light, that warmth is something positive and ultimately redemptive. So the Medrash very much recounts that and says there's a direct link between someone who faithfully, regularly observes the mitzvah of Shabbos candles and someone who will be zocha to Neros Shel Tzion, that the ultimate redemption and return to Eretz Yisrael is also captured in that image of the candles. That's number one. Number two, something that some of you may be even more familiar with, I think it is more well known, is the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, which I have there for source number three, which connects someone who lights candles, Haragil Baner, and again, I use that before I said faithfully and regularly, specifically, because Chazal are always referring to not just someone who happened to have, every time you light the candles is a mitzvah, but the skula, the special reward, the power, the potency, and the spiritual message of Shabbos candles is a unique gift and a reward to someone who regularly lights the Shabbos candles. The Gemara here is quite explicit. Haragil b'ner. But what's the reward the Gemara here speaks about? Not the broader sense of return to Tzion and Geula, but specifically says the Gemara, source number three, Havin labanim tamid chachamim. And as the Mishnah Berurah explains in source number four, there is, as you probably know, there's a well-known pasuk, Kiner mitzvah v'torah or, metaphorically, already going back to Tanakh, and embellished by Chazal, there is an association between light and candles and Torah. And therefore, Chazal, in this very famous statement, see a link, see a connection between a woman who regularly and faithfully lights her Shabbos candles and the ability to have children who will then carry on the Mesorah specifically of learning Torah. And I think that it is for that reason, no surprise, again, this I assume you're all familiar with, this is a very beautiful and inspiring message, and it's therefore not a surprise that many, many women have the custom that while they're lighting Shabbos candles, they use that as an opportunity to offer a personal or a special tefillah. I know there are a lot of time, a lot of women I've seen, I think my wife even got her as a present at some point. I think if I say it that way, you now know that it wasn't present there. I got her. But somebody, I think, got her a present. I'm usually way too rushed, unfortunately. We'll discuss by the end of this year the husband's role. Don't worry, I will get to that. If for no one's sake, other than my own at least. But I'll tell you in advance, I'm not so involved because I'll blame it on being a rabbi. I'm usually very, very busy running into Shabbos. But somebody, I hope related to her, somebody got my wife, I think, a gift. And I know many women, we've been in many homes where you see people have, you know, these various beautiful different ways of having this tefillah near the Shabbos candles. And that's not just like an intuitive sense that women have, although I think the intuitive sense is on the mark. But in fact, the Mishnah Berurah brings this down in source number four, where I have it underlined. After quoting this idea that Shabbos candles has the ability to be a skula, again, as a kind of a spiritual extra little oomph and power to hopefully have children who are studying Torah and learning Torah and being successful, says the Mishnah Berurah, therefore, ulekach, source number four, roi shetitpalal ha'isha achar shetigmor ha'adlaka v'habracha sheitin la'kadosh baruch ubanim zuchare me'irim b'torah. And again, I think, and again, I'm not going to shy away from it. I gave you the source, so we're certainly not hiding from it. It's true that Chazal here and then the Mishnah Berurah after him, after them, do specifically speak about sons, specifically. And I think the reason for that is because, as you know, again, this may be a topic that we'll discuss multiple times if you want, but this could definitely be a series, is the role of women in learning Torah. But that's not our topic today. But certainly for our purposes, we should acknowledge what you all know, I think anyway, which is that the primary focus and certainly the technical obligation for study of Torah has always traditionally been understood more to be an obligation on men or males or boys. And therefore, if there's specifically association between candles and Torah, it makes sense that Chazal speak in terms of who, especially traditionally, who's more likely to be the one learning the Torah. So if you're hoping that candles is a school for learning Torah, it obviously made sense, certainly historically, and I think you can make the case even now to a large extent that one thinks about that specifically in the sense of sons or boys. But I would say this in all honesty, and not only because I have a daughter, but I really believe it. Again, this is perhaps a foreshadow for this series that one day we'll have about the role of women in learning, and are women obligated, not obligated, what can women learn, what should women learn, a Gemara, all the different kind of questions, which I would be happy to have a series of shurim on. But certainly, I would argue that it goes back way before the 20th century. But at minimum, for well over 100 years, it's been acknowledged that it's incredibly important, if not even obligatory to some extent, in the modern era, for women to be studying Torah, which is why from Satmar to the most light non-Orthodox you could imagine, and everything in between, girls are all universally educated. Now, the Satmar-based Yaakovs are different than the Gerer-based Yaakovs, which are different than the Litvish-based Yaakovs, which are different than the religious Zionist schools. They are all educating different ways, but there's no such thing as nowadays women not being educated. So therefore, I don't think there's any reason to think that this Chazal would not apply, perhaps in a more diluted level, but nevertheless, I think the relevance for this Chazal in terms of our daughters, not only our sons, but also our daughters, I think is very, very meaningful. And I personally would have no problem if I was the one lighting the candles and making the bracha, davening not only for my sons, but also for my daughter to be connected to Torah in a way that is meaningful to her, in a way that hopefully helps her connect to Hashem and Halacha. So that is all, I guess you could say, 1A and 1B. What are we dealing with? Why do we have this two-part series that we're going to do on the law of the Shabbos candles? So number one is because it's an obligation. It's a chiyuv. And even though we haven't discussed why yet, which we'll get to, but already we've been assuming, among friends, and we already saw in at least one source, the assumption that, of course, we're talking about the women lighting. So for now, let's just, we're going to speak, obviously, generally on the assumption that the women are lighting, although we'll explain why, and are there any exceptions to that by the end of today's year. But we know it's an obligation. For now, let's say it's an obligation for women, although I'm going to reformulate that in a little bit. But for now, let's say it's an obligation, and for now we're assuming on women. And number two, it's not just an obligation. Some things are just mitzvos, but this is actually much more than that. This is one of those mitzvos which Chazal promise all sorts of potential reward. We live in an era, all you need to do is open up any Jewish magazine, an era that's obsessed with skulas, right? Shortcuts, right? And it's funny, just recently I heard two different great gedolim ask the same question, Rav Herschel Schechter and Rav Asher Weiss. And they both gave the same answer. Which skulas are, how do you know which ones are the real ones, right? Is it the ones where they're always asking me to send a check? And if I give the tzedakah to the right organization, then this got old daven for me, and it's that school, and this. So they both gave the exact same answer. I believe in the schools that are brought down by Chazal. Almost none of the schools you see advertised in the magazines were brought down by Chazal. Okay, I won't say more than that at the moment on those ads in tzedakah organizations. But you can guess what I would say if I was saying more. Mm-hmm. But these are schools that are brought down by Chazal. This is the Gemara. This is the Medrash. So what does it mean that if I light candles, I'll be zochet to the Nero Shel Tzion? I can't tell you I really understand. But Chazal said it. And that has to mean something to us. And therefore, we would do it. We would do the mitzvah even if it was just because it's a mitzvah. But these are mitzvahs which actually Chazal, not some obscure source that you could find from some Kabbalist who may or may not have lived 1,400 years ago or something. But Chazal told us that there's a certain spiritual potency and power, dafka, to the mitzvah of Shabbos candles. And I think that should certainly mean something to us. Okay, let's move on now to our second very big and very central and important topic, which is, why are we lighting? Why are we lighting? What is the benefit, what is the purpose of lighting candles, bichlal? And this brings our attention to source number 5, a very important pasuk from the Navi in Sefer Yeshayahu. The Navi there speaks about Shabbos in general, and the Navi here is the source for the fact that, in fact, we have two special additional mitzvos to Shabbos that were added, perhaps as early as the time of the Nevi'im, but for our purposes, for shorthand, we'll say they're rabbinic obligations, or mitzvos mirabbanan, and this is the well-known phrase in the middle of source number 5, the karasa l'Shabbos oneg, l'kodesh Hashem mechubad, v'chibad etom yosos terachachem, v'tom chavtzecha v'daber dover. That is to say, embedded in this pasuk, are two very important phrases. There's more, but there's two that are relevant for our shiur, and that is the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos and the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos. For now, let's just translate Oneg. How? How do we want to translate Oneg? It's not a trick question.
Joy.
Joy, pleasure, good. And how do we translate Kavod?
Honor.
Honor, respect, good, I like both of those. So it sounds like, amazingly, there's a mitzvah, which is perhaps more easy to understand, we think of a religious obligation, to honor, respect Shabbos. But there's even a more enjoyable mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to enjoy Shabbos. Hopefully most of the time we do enjoy Shabbos. Sometimes we, you know, but guess what? We don't have to feel guilty. It's a mitzvah. Says the Navi, it's a mitzvah to have oneg Shabbos. Now, as you all know, in the Aseres HaDibros, we have two other mitzvahs, right? One is Zachor and one is Shamor. Those are mitzvahs daraisa. Those are from the Torah. Right? Zachor is the mitzvah saseh, kiddush, havdalah, things like that, perhaps. And shamor is all the things we can't do on Shabbos, daraisa. But says the Navi, there's also two other things. Two rabbinic mitzvahs, perhaps going back all to the time of the Nevi'im. Kavod and Oneg. Almost all poskim, and we'll certainly assume this as a practical assumption, almost all poskim assume that the mitzvah of lighting candles is not min haTorah. If it would have been, it would have been under Zachor. No one pretty much, almost nobody thinks it is. If it's rabbinic, so that begs the question, okay, well, which rabbinic mitzvah is it? Do we light Shabbos candles as a way of honoring Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos? Or do we light Shabbos candles because that brings some kind of pleasure or enhancement to the Shabbos experience because of Oneg? If you go through Midrashim and multiple Mefarshim, you will see a machlokus about this. And I just gave you a quick sample of that in sources 6 and 7. Rashi says very clearly, source number 6, why do we light Shabbos candles? We honor Shabbos by doing so. Kavod Shabbos. After all, says Rashi, and here Rashi is, I don't know exactly what was going on in northern France in the time of Rashi, culturally, but one, and even culinarily, but one thing I do know, Rashi understood the notion of ambiance and a candlelit dinner. Says Rashi, clearly, it's a more mechubad meal when you have candles. Right? Exactly, as I say, you know, the French always cared about their food, understood this. Rashi says quite clearly, it adds a certain ambiance. It's a suda chashuva when you have that extra light. Tosfos, however, so not, you know, already we're talking just a generation or two later and pretty much the same area of the world, but nevertheless says Tosfos, why do we light candles? Mishum oneg. And I think that's also true, right? It's a known phenomenon, right? First of all, in general, presentation, right? Why is it that so many people, maybe in this room, and certainly when you go to fancy restaurants, right, and caterers, they spend so much effort on, and money, on presentation. The food's the food, right? The answer is no, it enhances the experience. But it's not just, that's on the fancy level. How about on the most basic level? If you don't see what you're eating, right, the ability to see what you're eating enhances the sensory experience. I think it's, again, it's tragic, but I think it's a well-known thing that if someone, God forbid, who would be blind, they literally don't experience the food, or lots of things, obviously, but even something like food, there is a slight difference in the experience because you can't see the food. So Tosfos says, no, you know what? We have to have light because it'll help us enjoy Shabbos more. Is it to mechabe, to honor Shabbos, or is it the enjoyment? Interestingly, as a way of kind of refining, and I want to add a very important point to this discussion, the Rambam in sources 8 and 9, the Rambam seems to contradict himself. In source number 8, the Rambam actually says that candles are part of the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos. You see there at the bottom of source number 8, I'll get back to what he said a little bit earlier in that same source. We'll get back to that in a moment. But here the Rambam has a whole discussion about all the things you're supposed to do to enjoy the Shabbos experience. One of them, says the Rambam, is candles. Now I just want to pause for 1 second. I alluded to it before, but I should point out, for all of us, but especially for our families, our children, our grandchildren, this is an important point. Yeah, this could be almost its own drusha, or if not shir, which is, it's important that people, but especially our children, enjoy Shabbos. If all of Shabbos is just, you can't do this, you can't play with this, you can't use that device, you must sit at the table for this long and that long, you must have a Dvar Torah, you must answer Parsha questions, you must sing a song, you must not do that, our kids will not enjoy Shabbos. First of all, that's already a problem inherently, and you don't have to be a parenting expert to imagine the long-term problems that that's going to affect. But it's not just good parenting. It's a mitzvah to enjoy Shabbos, and not just for you, but for your children also. Now, there's appropriate ways to enjoy Shabbos. There's inappropriate ways to enjoy Shabbos. Okay, that's a separate discussion, which is both halachic and parenting-wise, perhaps. But the notion that Shabbos is just about don't, that's not only a disaster in a parenting perspective, that's also just wrong religiously. Owning Shabbos is important, and the Rambam says, as we saw previously from Tosfos, Shabbos candles, in a subtle way, enhances that. However, in source number 9, the Rambam seems to contradict himself. Because there the Rambam says, where it's underlined in number 9, Ner Daluk v'Shulchan Aruch, right? So you don't know, you have the candles, the table is set, the mitah mutzaz, your beds are all nice and made. Why? Kol Elu l'chvod Shabbos Hain. Right? So perhaps maybe you're not as careful during the week to make the bed, and the room's a little bit messy, and not just the bedroom, the living room, and the den, and the kitchen. But on Shabbos, we clean the house, we make everything nice and neat, we light the candles, we set the table to honor Shabbos. Well, which one is it? Right? The Rambam seems schizophrenic. Is it the kavod? Or is that the oneg? Is it the pleasure or the honor? So there are various interpretations that have been offered over the centuries to try to resolve this contradiction in the Rambam. But the one which I want to share with you particularly is in source number 10. And this is from the famed Reb Chaim Mibrisk, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, in source number 10. And he makes a very, very important distinction, which I think is very, very compelling. And it also, it's not just fascinating, compelling intellectually, but I think it actually has the ability to resonate very much practically with us. And as soon as this coming Friday, in Shabbos, I want you to be thinking about source number 10. Says Reb Chaim, if you look at the Rambams that we just read in sources number 8 and number 9, very carefully, in number 9, when the Rambam spoke about Kavod Shabbos, the Rambam spoke about, if you look at, go back to source number 9, at the end of the first line, Tzarech letaken beso, mi ba'od yom, mipnei Kavod Shabbos. The Rambam stresses that all the things that he talked about, which are honoring Shabbos, your house is clean, and you lit the candles and all that stuff, the Rambam stresses those are all things that are done mi ba'od yom. Mi ba'od yom means before it gets dark, i.e. Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos. Friday morning, Friday afternoon. Says Reb Chaim, and for sake of time, I won't read it inside, but you have it on the sheet if you're interested, source number 10. Says Reb Chaim, Kavod Shabbos means things we do before Shabbos. How do you honor a guest? How do you show respect for an important hush of a guest that's coming? It's all the things you do to prepare for him or her before they arrive. The way we show our respect for the Shabbos queen is by getting the house ready and doing all those things, preparing the food, etc., and lighting the candles, mi ba'od yom. To the extent that Shabbos candles are lit before Shabbos, which they are, 18 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever your minute is, and if you're running late, you could even, it's also okay. That is a fulfillment of Kavod Shabbos. We thought about the special guest that's coming, the Shabbos queen. We took the time, and in advance, we lit candles to set the tone, to show that this is an important thing. Those minutes, let's say Halavai, you get the full 20 minutes in or whatever it is, or if it's in the summer and you made early Shabbos, so you'd have even longer until it gets dark. That is a fulfillment of honoring Shabbos. However, Reb Chaim points out, when the Rambam discusses oneg, he does not talk about things you do before Shabbos. Oneg is, as we alluded to before, oneg is enjoying the Shabbos experience itself. And therefore, said Reb Chaim, it's not just that oneg is enjoyment and kavod is respect or honor, it's also that they take place at different times. And therefore, he says, it's not a contradiction. What the Rambam is telling us is that Shabbos candles are not just a mitzvah, they're not just a skula, as we saw previously, all sorts of good reward that comes with it. It's a double mitzvah. You get two mitzvahs when you light Shabbos candles. To the extent that you are able to hopefully be ready on time, which in this case means early, and you light the candles X number of minutes before it gets dark, before you had to, all that window of time, you fulfill the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos. But whether you have the wax or the paraffin, whatever you have, it's going to stay lit another hour, two, three. The amount of time that the candles remain lit on Shabbos itself, that is a fulfillment of Oneg Shabbos. It's enhancing your Shabbos experience. So he says it's not a contradiction. The Rambam is of the opinion that you actually fulfill both. Right? Again, it's like I sometimes give an example to my Talmidim. If you've ever been to, you know, the Cafe Rimon, all you can eat breakfast, or you went to a hotel for like, you know, one of those breakfasts, right? Do you want the pancake or the waffles? I'll take both. Right? Why do we have to pick? Why does it have to be covered or oneg? Says Reb Chaim, no, it's actually both. And I think this is not only very meduyak in the Rambam, it's not just conceptually compelling, but it works very well in the lashon, in the wording of the Rambam. Because the Rambam does stress about kavod, that those things are mi ba'od yom. And he only says that about kavod. So says Reb Chaim, kavod are the things we do in advance. So I think it works well in the language of the Rambam. Logically, it's compelling. I think it makes sense. We resonate with that. right? From, you know, when somebody, when Bubby and Zadie and Grandma and Grandpa are coming, you know, we make sure the house is nice and everything is good, right? That's a way of showing that respect, right? You don't want them to come in and see, you know, you could clean it an hour after they got there, but it's not the same message, right? When you do something to prepare, or it could be some people in the other direction, your children who live away from home, maybe you have married children who've been, maybe especially if they live in the States, who live here or something like that, when they finally come, you prepare the house, right? That's an expression of something even before they get there. So we don't have to choose. Says Reb Chaim, no, when we light before Shabbos, that's already a way of honoring Shabbos. Except the fact that the lamp candles stay lit, that enhances the Shabbos experience. So aside from the fact that I think it works well as a learning exercise, it explains the Rambam, I think it's really, we'll turn over the page now, I think it's really important for you, again, as soon as this coming Friday, already for you to internalize that everything you're doing, you know, some people start already Thursday night. I don't know that many people start even before that. But Ashrecha if you do. But whether it's Thursday night or Friday morning or later Friday morning, or sometimes people are running really, really late Friday afternoon, but at some point on Friday, everyone in this room, I hope including me, but certainly everyone else in this room, will be doing something to be preparing for Shabbos. That is a mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos. It's not just the work we need to do to get to the main dish. It's already a mitzvah. The things we do in advance to prepare for Shabbos is a mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos. It's also true that by showing the honor to Shabbos and preparing beforehand, that also enables us to have this incredible, hopefully beautiful, uplifting family, friend, spiritual experience on having Oneg Shabbos as well. So I think it's a broader point, but it also helps us understand the dual role of Shabbos candles. Now the interesting thing is, even though the main two big mitzvahs that we speak about are Kavod or Oneg, both, one, but there actually is a third dimension as well. Again, this mitzvah of Shabbos candles is filled with so much good stuff. So we got the mitzvah, we got the skula, now we got one mitzvah, now we got two mitzvahs. It's actually more than that. There's three. Take a look at source number 11. Rava tells us in the Gemara, Rava's actually discussing a very interesting question. No one should ever know from this. Nebuch, somebody would be so poor come the end of November this year, and they have to light Shabbos candles and Hanukkah candles. What if you only have enough money for one? Which one should you do? So the Gemara tells us, this is source number 11, for sure Shabbos candles would have to take precedence. But Hanukkah, why would Shabbos Dafka be before Hanukkah? So says the Gemara, Shalom Bayis. Now, before you get too emotional about this is not the Shalom Bayis they spoke about at your Shabbos Shavuot Brachos. This is a different type. That's important. That's all real. I don't mean to belittle Shabbos Shavuot Brachos or messages of Shalom Bayis. There's nothing more important than that. But that's not what the Gemara means here. Rashi points out in both sources 12 and 13 that the Shalom Bayis here is something far less romantic or even sublime. It means something very, very practical. It's no fun to go through Shabbos if you're constantly stubbing your toe because you can't see where you're going. Rashi in source number 12, if you had no light, B'nei Beso Mitztarin Leishei B'choshech. It's no fun. It's painful, literally or emotionally, to be sitting in the dark. Or Rashi says again in source number 13, Haholech v'nikashel v'holech b'afili. You're going to bump your knee, you're going to fall, you're going to trip. In other words, one of the additional points about Shabbos is not just the emotional uplifting pleasure and the sublime respect. It's all of that. That's kavod, that's oneg. But it's also simply, we want to be able to have an enjoyable Shabbos in the most simple way. Again, this is something that obviously, for most of human history, they really appreciated. In our generation, we have a harder time appreciating it because we live, you know, constantly under the benefit of thousands and thousands of watts coming out of our ceiling. In fact, Emir Tz Hashem, part of next week's shiur, will be to discuss what is the relationship between the candles and electricity. Can you light electric lights if you didn't have candles? Are you supposed to turn off? How does you relate to your lights in your room? Do you turn them off before you light? Is that part of the mitzvah? That'll all be part of next week's, one of the things we're going to discuss next week. But the point here is, even on a basic level, at least certainly, you know, in most of human history before there was electricity, Shabbos candles served a third, very, very prosaic, very practical point, and that's what's called Shalom Bayis. It's interesting that you should just be aware, even though nowadays, as I say, it doesn't exactly serve that role for us because we have so much electricity, etc. But there are some practical halakhic questions which are relevant, perhaps, to this question. So, for example, if you had a candle that was lit, let's say you had one of those, like, you know, massive candles they sell at, you know, I don't know, Bed Bath & Beyond, or I don't know where else people sell these huge candles that could last for days at a time, right? You'd probably get dizzy already from the smell at some point if you never blew it out. But, you know, I have a sister, actually, who loves this stuff. Like, our house is filled with these vanilla candles and other things. And she lights them during the week. Like, when they come home from work, her and her husband, they just light them because they enjoy the smell. Let's say you had it on from Wednesday or Thursday or something, and it was still on Friday afternoon. Can you just count, make a bracha on that? So this is part of that question. If the only halacha was shalom bayis, so I need light, so I don't stub my toe, well, I have light. Who said it has to be lit specifically for Shabbos? But if it's l'chavod Shabbos, well, that wasn't l'chavod Shabbos, that was l'chavod having a nice scent 3 days ago. Or another question, very, very practical. How many rooms need to have Shabbos candles? So again, in the pre-electricity world, this was very important because the only light you had was from candles. So it was part of the mitzvah on Friday for the woman of the house to light only in the dining room or only in the kitchen, or would they have to light in other rooms? And the answer is it depends on what the mitzvah is for. If we're just talking about kavod or oneg, the poskim assume that that's limited to, let's say, where you eat. However, since we now know that there's this third dimension called shalom bayis to the poskim, we don't want you to stub your toe in the bathroom, getting out of bed, or any other room of the house. And therefore, it's important, and this is practically halacha lemaisa, any room in which you will be using over Shabbos, you need to have light, assuming that you desire light. Right? If you have, if in the bedroom, all you do is get up and you don't worry about tripping and you can't sleep if there's even a nightlight on or something, there's no mitzvah to have light because it says the Gemara Shalom Bayis if that's going to ruin your Shabbos. Right? Sometimes people are in a hotel room or something for Shabbos and the only light they turn on is the light over the bed or something. You know, that's not a mitzvah to keep that on because the Gemara said, and Rabbi Gottlieb said, you're supposed to have light in every room you're going to be in over Shabbos. But any room in which it would be beneficial to have light, it is part of the mitzvah of Shabbos candles to prepare that in advance. And therefore, I would tell you, leave aside what we'll discuss in Mirtz Hashem next week about, let's say, in your dining room or wherever you know your leichter is, you know, to what extent do you include electric light there for the mitzvah. Yeah, that's next week's shiur. But it is important, and it's not just important. Good news, you get mitzvah points for it. To the extent that you're making sure, like in every Jewish family, someone's screaming, make sure to turn on the lights, turn off the lights, right? There's the constant messages, and you get, you know, which room is on the lights, which room, the hallway lights are on, the bathroom light. But making sure there's light where you need it to be, this hallway versus that hallway, this bathroom, making sure there's light in all those rooms is actually part of the mitzvah of Shabbos candles, because it's a fulfillment of the Shalom Bayis idea that the Gemara here discussed. Okay, I did a lot of talking. Any questions? I'm mesmerizing or I'm boring? Which one? Any questions? I was so clear? So clear. Okay, fantastic. So we have one more thing to do, one more section to do, and that'll round out part one, and then that'll set us up in Mirtz Hashem for next week. The last topic I want to discuss, which is something which you've been alluding to, but now we'll discuss more in depth and we'll broaden the discussion, which is, who is obligated to light these candles? So far we've been discussing a lot of the obligation and the why, kavod, oneg, shalom bayis. We've mainly been focusing on, you know, obligation and why. Now I want to discuss who. Who is obligated and who is going to light? Now, aside from the, you know, the seeming trick question of the wife versus the husband, although we're going to get to exactly where this comes from, that it became a woman's mitzvah. We're going to get to that. But A, what's the role of the husband? B, what about single daughters? Should they be lighting or not? You know, young boys, certainly over bar mitzvah, but even if they're below bar mitzvah, what if you have a daughter who's 14 or 15? Why shouldn't she light if it's a woman's mitzvah? Right, so we'll discuss that. What about children who are not at home for Shabbos? So you'll tell me, well, they're at someone else's house. Maybe they're, does that count? Or, moreover, what about if you have, I don't know, a boy or a girl who's in the dorm? In a yeshiva dorm, a seminary dorm? That's what I want to discuss to round out today's shiur. Okay, so take a look at source number 14. It's clear from many, many sources that men and women are obligated in the midst of Shabbos candles. In fact, if you just turn over for 1 second, if you want to go back just to see the earliest authoritative source, it's actually in source number 8, which we saw previously. I didn't read this underlined part. The first underlined part of source number 8, the Rambam says, Echad anoshim ve'echad anoshim chayoven lios v'beteyen ner daluk b'Shabbos. So it's only half true that Shabbos candles are a woman's mitzvah. The Rambam is clear. The Shulchan Aruch brings this down as well. that the men are obligated to have Shabbos candles. So at minimum what that would mean is, if for whatever reason someone's wife wouldn't light, a man doesn't, you know, if your husband didn't put on tefillin one day, that I assume would be upsetting to you, but you couldn't make him do it, and you wouldn't do it for him, and even if you did put on tefillin, that wouldn't help him for his mitzvah, it's not connected. Right? But on the other hand, if a man has, either there's no wife, that's a single man, divorced, widowed, never married, or for whatever reason his wife is in bed sick, she can't, it becomes, there is an obligation on men to have the Shabbos candles. Despite the fact that there's an obligation on the men, and that I want to make very clear, it is obviously traditional, when I say traditional, I mean like from the way beginning, that women are the one who do this mitzvah. So before we get to the why, right, if we started off by saying men and women are both obligated, so then how come it became this thing that men got pushed out of the way and the women did it? We'll answer that in a moment. But before I discuss why that was, how do we understand that? I'm going to give you two analogies, and you tell me which one you think is more accurate. Every Shabbos at night or in the morning, let's say that I'm assuming the traditional family structure, a husband makes kiddush. Presumably, I think this is uncontroversial, and for now, at least for our thought experiment, we'll assume this. Everyone, the men and the women at the table, the guests, the children, everyone's obligated to have kiddush. The husband makes kiddush to be motzi everybody else, just like the Baal Koreh read the Torah. The Baal Tokeah blew the shofar, right? We do things on behalf of other people. There's such a phenomenon as that. Husband made kiddush, we all answer amen, and you drink, fine. There's also a phenomenon of Hanukkah candles. Hanukkah candles, even though traditionally all the kids light, and in many families women also light, we'll have that shiur in a few weeks, but it's clear from the Gemara that not every person is obligated to light Hanukkah candles. The Gemara says, what's the mitzvah of Hanukkah? Ner ish ubeso. If you had one menorah for the whole house, everyone would be yotzei. Not because whoever lit it was being motzi you the way making kiddush is. It's because the mitzvah isn't on you, and me. The mitzvah is on us, the family, the house. A mezuzah. Right? Let's, for argument's sake, now assume that the husband put up the mezuzah. He was doing his mitzvah? No. It's all of our mitzvah. He's just the one who put it up, but it's our mitzvah. Right? There are two different models, right? Sometimes everyone is individually obligated, independently obligated. But we have, just like you're a lawyer, can do things for you. You can have a shliach doing things for you. So someone is motzi you, but you are obligated individually. And other times, the family is obligated. Which one do you think Shabbos candles is? Is it more like kiddush or more like Hanukkah? You think Hanukkah?
Rambam says,
good.
It doesn't talk about hadlaka. It's just
okay, but that's an important question, which I was going to elide over, but I am not at all surprised, Ms. Weinberg, that you caught me on that. But I don't think that's the same issue as, okay, but who's obligated to make sure there's a ner daluk?
It doesn't say. Well,
okay, so I'm asking you to think.
Right.
I'm getting. Okay, but I'm about to get to that. You're reading ahead. Cheater. You're a teacher. You should know. It's not fair to do that to another teacher. Yes. What do you think?
I think that it's like kiddush because you're lighting for everyone, have everyone in mind. And if you can't do it, but then you're sitting in bed and the husband has to do
good.
It.
So I didn't put it on the sheet, but that's what the Shulchan Aruch Harav says. The Shulchan Aruch Harav was the first founding of the Bava Cherebi, the Baal HaTanya. So he didn't just do kumtzes and go to tzama all day. He actually was a big posek. He wrote the Shulchan Aruch Harav. So he says exactly like you. He says everyone is obligated, and basically the wife is the shliach for the family members, just like the husband will be the shliach when he lights when he makes kiddush. The wife is the shliach when she lights Shabbos candles.
Doesn't have to be there.
Oh, very good. So that's not on the sheet, but you guys are so learned, and I couldn't fit it. Anyway, I wouldn't be able to fit it all in. There's a whole discussion. There's a tshuva of the Tzitz Eliezer where he discusses exactly this point. Fantastic, Alyssa. Fantastic. Yes.
You have to be there to hear.
Good, because you're both good. Good, excellent. So who disagrees with that? Who disagrees with you and the Shulchan Aruch Harav? You're in good. You have good support. Don't worry. But it's not all. So now I'll get to you. Now turn your attention to source number 14. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, what is the mitzvah? Shekol mishpacha Chayeves b'hadlakas ner. It's not a mitzvah on any individual. It's a mitzvah on the family. If you take a look, if you skip down to source number 19, on the second line, there you see it's the same author, Aruch HaShulchan, he says the same thing. Hachiv rak al ha mishpacha. It's like a mezuzah, or it's like the Hanukkah candles. So first of all, it's just important to be aware what is going on. And I think that if you assume that it's a shliach idea, so then we have to really want, either way, I guess we want to wonder, and this is what we're going to answer in the moment, why is it, how did it become traditional, and not just traditional, it's much more than that, it's universal, that women are the ones that light the Shabbos candles. If it's a mitzvah on every individual, so why is it that the wife is the shliach and not the husband? And if it's a mitzvah on the family, so why is it that the wife is given that status as the head of the family for this mitzvah, whereas we know in other mitzvahs, the husband plays that role? So the answer to both of these, to whichever way you formulate it, and it could be that there's practical issues, but differences between the two, but for our purposes, I just wanted to sensitize you to the question. But however you want to formulate it, there are two answers to this question, two possible answers. And to make things easy for us, I, instead of giving you all the primary sources, I gave you a summary source, which is source number 16. The Tur quotes two reasons. Let's take a look at source number 16 on the second line. He's quoting from the Rambam, and Midrashim even before the Rambam. He says very simple. Why is it that women are the ones who universally light Shabbos candles? V'pnei shemitzuyos b'bayis v'oseket b'tzarchei habayis. Which I think he means as follows. And that fits very nicely, especially if we assume that it's a mitzvah on the family. Right? And I say this not only because I'm in a room as the only male. I would say this in a room of all men too. Tachlis, who runs the house? If it's a reasonably well-functioning house, obviously the wife. It's not even a question. I'll tell you a cute story, a true story. My son Yaakov, who's now 21, about to go back to yeshiva after having got out of the army. When he was 5, 6 years old, I can't remember, just first grade, I think. We were in Baltimore. So I'm putting him to bed one night. He says, Abba, I have a question. How come all the time, whenever I ask you, can I do this or that, you always say, you have to ask mommy, she's the boss. But we just learned in school, Parshas Bereishis, when Chava got punished, and the Pasuk says that the man is going to be the boss. V'huyim sholbach. That's a pretty good question for a six-year-old. So again, I don't know about it in your family, but in my family, anytime they ask me, I think, yes, no, you have to ask mommy. She's the boss. So I said to him, you now understand the difference between Tarshav Achsav and Tarshav Alpat. It may say he's the boss, but ain't no Jewish family that I ever met where the husband's the boss. Nor should it be. Right? The answer is, if this is an inyan of the bias, if Shabbos candles is a mitzvah on the bias, on enhancing the house, and giving the house a certain ambiance for Shabbos, of preparing the house and the home and the family for Shabbos, it makes sense that the person who practically is the one who really runs things, which we all know is the wife, is the woman of the house, it makes sense, says the Rambam, that she be the one who is in the prominent role of lighting the candles. Now that, to me, I think it's true, number one. Number two is I find that, if I can say so myself, very inspiring and uplifting and very meaningful. There is a second reason you should be aware of, and since I'm intellectually honest and this is a fully transparent shear, I won't hide it from you. You may find this second answer less appealing, I should say, but you should be aware that it does exist out there, and that is what the Torah there, again, going back to source 16, he quotes from the Medrash. Nothing to do with the woman running the house, and this is a part of the family and all that. Says the Torah, there's a Medrash. It also goes back to Parshas Bereishis last week. Says the Medrash, when Chava sinned by eating the fruit of the Eitz Hadas, when Chava then made her matters worse by getting her husband to do the same thing, Kavtsa Nero Shel Olam, Mneshigarma Misa L'Adam HaRishon. There was not going to be any death. Again, we can't relate to what it was like in the Garden of Eden and what Adam and Chava were like. I mean, it's just, you know, we can barely relate to people who lived 500 years ago, let alone the Rambam, let alone Avram Avinu. But the difference between even Avram and Adam is a different universe entirely. It's a completely different type of existence. So whatever this means, I have no idea. But it's clear from tradition, in many Midrashim, that before they ate from the Eitz Hadas, there was not going to be any death. And in some metaphorical sense, Adam was referred to as Oro Shalolam, the light of the world. By Chava sinning with the Eitz Hadas, she brought death into the world. The whole phenomenon of death would not have existed otherwise. And in a certain sense, she extinguished the light of the world because her sin eventually led to death. A neshama is like light, the person's going to die. So therefore that brought death into the world, brings an extinguishing of the light. And therefore, says the Medrash, as a, so to speak, a tikkun, as an everlasting kapara for that sin of the original woman, of Chava, women for all history light the Shabbos candles to be mosif or, to bring more light into the world, as a kind of a tikkun for the original sin that Chava had done when she extinguished the light. What do you say? Appealing, not appealing, reasonable, not reasonable, slightly harsh, less inspiring than the Rambam's view. Okay, it is what it is. I share this with you. If you find them both meaningful, so then you're in an enviable position. If you find the Rambam's position more meaningful and uplifting, you have my rabbinically endorsed permission to only think about that when you're lighting the candles. Okay, but you should. The bottom line is either way, one or both. This is why, again, going back to Chazal, we're talking about many, many, you know, as long as anyone can remember and document, this is always a mitzvah that was performed by the women, even though, depending on who you ask, you'll either say it's a mitzvah on the whole family or in every individual. But either way, it's not only a mitzvah on the women. And yet, women are given the primary responsibility and privilege of lighting. Now, but given that kind of background, so now we're ready to understand, is there and should there be a role for the husband at all? If this was exclusively a feminine woman's mitzvah, so then why would a husband have any role? But now that we understand that it's either a mitzvah on every individual of the family, but the wife's representing them, or it's a mitzvah on the unit of the family and the wife's representing them, it's at least reasonable to think that maybe the husband should have some secondary helping role. And in fact, a number of mafarshim in sources number 17 and 18. I gave you from both Rabbi Kiva Eger in source number 17 and number 18 is the Mishnah Berurah. They both say, I'll just read you the line in the Mishnah Berurah, source number 18, Tov Shaishi Taken HaNeros. Or the way the Rabbi Kiva Eger said it in 17, Habalabai Itaken HaNerot VaIshto Tadlik. In other words, there is a tradition and a recommendation for the husband to be involved in preparing or setting up the candles. There have been weeks when I've been able to do this. But my recommendation and my bracha and my tefillah for all of you is that your husbands should all be better than me at that. Again, I could blame it on the fact that I'm busier than the average person right before Shabbos, since unlike most Jews, I work on Shabbos. But nevertheless, that's something that I probably should try to be better at. My kids have kind of picked up the slack for me. But I think it's a very, very nice thing. If it's the kids, I think it's fine, but it's better that it should be the husband to prepare the candles for his wife. In other words, the queen of the house, in this sense, I mean this meaningfully, you should show up and the candles should be prepared for you. I think that's a very, very meaningful thing on many, many levels. And if your children do it, that's fine. But I think it would be even better, and this is already brought down by Poskim, that there's an idea, since really it is partially the husband's mitzvah too, so even though the wife is playing the dominant and the prominent role, but the husband should play a kind of a supportive role. Right? A little bit of a role reversal, the way we usually think of the relationship between husband and wives, and men and women. So it's not a bad thing for every now and then the husband to feel like they're helping out their wife, and not just the wife always helping out their husband. Again, as I say, on many, many levels, I think that that's a very healthy thing, and it's not me. It's Rabbi Kiva Eger, it's the Mishnah Berurah, and it's others. Just to be aware of, a number of the posts can point out, well, let's say, again, I can't imagine this ever happening, but you know, in Torah, often we have hypotheticals. At least they bring out interesting points. The posts can speak about, let's say the husband says, you know what, I always grow up in yeshiva, I just assume, oh yeah, that's my sister's mitzvah, my mom's mitzvah. But now that I learned a little bit, I know it's also my mitzvah. So I don't want you to do it, I'm doing it. I make kiddush, I'm doing it. Can a husband, quote unquote, take it away from his wife? Again, would it ever happen? I don't know. I've never heard such a thing. It sounds crazy, right? But the poskim, right? He's not allowed. If she doesn't want to light or can't light, that's a different story. But if a woman wants to light, her husband is not allowed to take it away, for she has the primary zchut to light the candles, and no one can take that away from her. Now, as we know, in many areas of life, hopefully we stress this as parents when it's appropriate, and we know it's true certainly in religion as well, a greater privilege comes with greater responsibility. And I would be remiss, again, it's a little bit of a scary, maybe even a shocking statement of Chazal, but we should acknowledge it. We shouldn't hide from it. But the poskim point out that the earliest source, not the why, but the earliest source for the fact that there's a special responsibility that women have for Shabbos candles is the Mishnah in source number 15, which tells us that there are certain very serious averos that if a woman is not careful about and she is lax in on a regular basis, Rachmana Litzlan, she may die in childbirth. Which again, for most of human history, was a real fear. Right? We are living in an incredibly blessed time where it's almost unheard of for women to die in childbirth. When I was a child, which is not that long ago, there was a woman in my neighborhood who did die in childbirth. Which is only, was only about 35, somewhere, probably about 35 years ago. It was a horrible, horrible tragedy, obviously. So you do hear about these things every now and then, but really very, very rare. But as you know, for most of human history, it was unbelievably dangerous for a woman to give birth. And the Mishnah, source number 15, says there are certain averos, al shalosh averos, nashim metos b'shas leidasan. Right? You're already in objectively a dangerous situation of giving birth, and if it's already objectively dangerous from a purely physical perspective, it wouldn't be that hard for Hashem to use that as an opportunity to punish you if you so deserved. So the three mitzvot, which are very famously considered primary responsibilities of the wife or the woman, are of course the area of nida, the area of separating challah, and the third one the Mishnah says is hadlaka saner. So again, I don't think that's what you should be thinking about when you light candles. That certainly wouldn't be inspiring to anybody. But nevertheless, it is certainly why these three? Why such a harsh punishment? The answer is I'm not sure. And we don't have time to get into it even if I was sure. I don't think this is, again, I believe in, I'm not hiding you. You're all grown up, you're all bright, you can all handle all the sources. I'm not worried about any of that. But nevertheless, you should just be aware of this. Again, it is, for some people this gives them strength, for some people it's a little bit of a depressing thought. I don't think it should be what you need to focus on. There's many, many other sources which are quite more beautiful and uplifting, but you should be aware this certainly underscores that the primary privilege, but also the achrayas, the responsibility that women have in lighting candles. Just to finish up, I want to mention two final points. Number one is, what about single girls? So in source number 19, the Aruch HaShulchan, he is actually one of the opinions who says explicitly, Mikamakam habanos mepnei shehen nitztavot yoter kemo shenitbaram mevarchas kol achas v'achas. The Aruch HaShulchan was of the opinion that single girls should light. At what age? He doesn't say here, but like any other mitzvah where you try to figure out at what age your child, boy or girl, is ready to do mitzvahs even before they're a bar bat mitzvah, so girls should already light. And as some of you may know, at least in America, this became very well known as the campaign of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. In Chabad, this is a very big, big thing that all the single girls liked. The Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't come up with the idea, but he's the one who popularized it. I'm not sure in how many families this is common outside of Chabad. I don't think it's so common. It certainly was never the minug in my family. But if you have that minug, nothing wrong with it whatsoever. If you don't have that minug, I wouldn't necessarily do it because it's certainly very, very rare. But there are families who have the tradition for single girls to light. Last but not least, I just want to mention, what about if you have children who are out of the house? After all, if this is a family mitzvah, so how does that family member fulfill his or her mitzvah? So if you have a child who's having a sleepover, so the answer is that they fulfill the mitzvah by whoever the mom or the wife is lighting whatever house they're staying in. If you're sleeping over for Shabbos at someone's house, you become Mibnei Beitam. Which, by the way, if you are sleeping over at your parents' house, or your parents sleeping over at your house for Shabbos, even though it's virtually universal that married women, even when they're out of their house, let's say sleeping, you go away for Yom Tov, if you go away for Shabbos, married women light, Mikara Din, you're not Chayiv. If you are sleeping over at your parents' house, sleeping over at your whoever's house, and the woman of the house is lighting, you are part of the house for Shabbos. You don't have to light. Okay? I've never heard a woman's like, okay, I'll take a week off. Right? It's hardwired into women. Married women want to light, at least the ones I know. And that's fine. But certainly it's true for your single children that when they're away for Shabbos, they fulfill the mitzvah, even if they're adult, even if they're over bar or bat mitzvah, they fulfill the mitzvah through their host. If you have a boy, for example, who's in a dorm, there are some girls who are in dorms too, but certainly let's say a boy who's in a dorm, the answer is, then they're not yotzei with you, and they're not, and there's no who's lighting. The answer is, hopefully, you send your kid to a yeshiva that knows what they're doing, and the yeshiva lights. And every yeshiva that I've been a part of, they light candles in the chadar ochel, in the dining room. Just like one candles are lit for your family, so there could be one candles lit for the whole yeshiva. But they absolutely should light. But, and with this we'll end, they should be aware. Again, I don't think, it's not practical in the sense that they're going to do it anyway, but if you want to teach them something, it's a good thing to teach them. If they're, let's say, in their dorm room, or wherever it is that they're staying, or in camp, or wherever, whatever light they would need for Shabbos, they want to keep on a reading light by their bed, or they need a bathroom light, if they prepare that before Shabbos, which presumably they're going to do anyway, because they need the light, but tell them, you should know, if they have in mind, when they turn on that light, when they keep that reading light by their bed, that's part of the mitzvah of Shabbos candles. Maybe whoever, the head counselor, or the dorm counselor, whoever was lighting in the Chadar Ochel, that's fine. But to the extent that they need light in whichever part of the dorm, the camp, or wherever it is that they are for Shabbos, that is also part of the mitzvah. Okay?
Thank you.
Any questions? Still none. Oh, yes, a question. Yes.